Inoho, please be seated.
Okie doke. Mr. Young. Donald Young.
Doesn't matter.
Do you swear by Almighty God that the evidence you give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Can you confirm your full name for the record?
Donald Alan Young.
And you have provided a submission on Plan Change 7 dated 13 April 2020?
Yes.
And you have also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to make in relation to your submission, and you've handed a copy of those key points up today, and you have a date of 12 May 2021 recorded on the top.
That's right. It's just an improvement on the first one.
Very good. If you could confirm that the evidence you're about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief.
I do.
And do you now wish to proceed with your summary of your key points?
Yes, so it won't take long.
Thank you.
Your Honour, if I might add just a little group of us was speaking last night and the issue of fire protection and we thought perhaps, well, it was suggested that I mentioned that nothing's really come up about the importance of water.
Yeah, you need water
on individual farms
for that. Yeah.
Yes, and in other areas, I do know district schemes have to take off points that fire engines or firefighting equipment can plug into, but that hasn't been mentioned at all here. And
okay, yeah. So I am generally aware of that, and and what do you want to say about that in particular?
I was just to point out that the group felt that there hadn't been emphasis enough in any of the submissions.
Yeah. I mean, there's three things which are essential: that you have drinking water, you know,
yes,
for yourself, for stock water, and for fire.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And when I say I'm not just diminishing the other uses, but they're core uses. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Dictatorship or democracy? Five submissions for versus 500 submissions against. Those 500 will be representing at least four direct family members and or business partners, making the number more accurately 2,000 plus submitters against. My name is Donald Young. I farm Teoma Station at Lowburn. I began farming 60 years ago at Terrace when my father died. The property came with a deemed water right out of Wainui Creek and a two-head share of the Ministry Works Ardgour race as well. I was chairman of the Terrace Water Committee for 25 years, representing Bendigo, Terrace and Ardgour Ministry Works races. There were 16 Ministry Works schemes in Otago at the time, and representatives of the schemes met quarterly with the Ministry Works staff. Looking back, they were very helpful meetings where both sides were listened to and we respected each other's views. I sold the Terrace property 30 years ago and moved to the Lowburn property of Teoma Station, where I still farm to this day. 1,100 hectares with a three-head water right. In fact, it was the first deemed permit issued for the Lowburn catchment in 1862 for gold mining and was transferred as an irrigation permit to Teoma Station in 1905 and has never stopped running since. Since farming Teoma Station, I've gone from wild flood contour irrigation and border dikes to nearly all K-line spray irrigation. I irrigate 100 hectares requiring 50 litres per second, The current deemed permit is for 3 heads, or 88 litres a second. The Lobing Creek catchment is not over-allocated, and to my knowledge has never run dry, and since I have been involved, there has always been a good flow into Lake Dunstan. The powers that be in Otago Regional Council have got it into their mindsets that irrigation water has to be so many million litres of water a year. This is meaningless. I need to have 50 litres a second flow to be able to cover my 100 hectare with K-line sprinklers. This brings me to my first case in point. One, you, madam, have spent days hearing from so-called experts, most of whom have never had any practical experience of irrigation. They seem to fill their days in with playing with models and blocks, not bothering to visit individual farming properties to see for themselves just how complex and important irrigation is to farming. No one system fits all. Every area, every property is so different. I'm speaking here on my experience of a lifetime in farming. I'm a member of Irrigation New Zealand. Two, I've visited the Ord River scheme, which waters 90,000 hectares in Western Australia. It began in 1970, the formation of Lake Argyle. Three, I've seen irrigation in Iran with systems going back 7,000 years and still successfully in use to this day. Four, Ecuador, right on the equator, with centre pivots watering sugarcane at sea level to market gardens and exportable roses on drippers at 3,000 metres above sea level. Five, Namibia and Zambia in Africa are growing grain under pivots and to folk who hand pump water for their stock. Six, Madagascar, a country twice the land area of New Zealand with 5 times the population, growing nearly enough rice to feed their population. All done by hand on wonderful terraced paddy fields, and not a single tractor did we see. I've seen more irrigation on this earth. I can possibly say I know more about water than anyone I've heard speaking at the last 3 months. I don't call myself an expert, but I do feel deeply hurt and insulted when I'm told by Otago Regional Council staff who have no understanding or practical experience or knowledge that I require an expert consultant. This brings me to my next case in point, cost. One, completely out of hand. Out of control, all driven by bureaucrats guarding their precious little jobs and so-called reports, without even having seen the situation on each individual property. Remember here, all situations differ. Not one size fits all. Three, farmers have managed their irrigation for more than 100 years with very little trouble. It's not broken. What are we fixing? Three, they're clogging up our computers completely. Remember, many of us do not have the smart Wi-Fi systems that city people enjoy. Hardly a day goes by without some wretched, meaningless minute emails filling up my in-files. Four, in this case, there are 5 for Rule 7A and 500 plus against. I strongly suggest, rather than do this expensive process that we are now bogged down with today, would it not be far more democratic, rather than dictatorial attitude, to simply withdraw Rules 7A and just roll the deemed permits over? In my case, I've spent hours on this ridiculous and costly rule change, millions of dollars completely wasted on meaningless reports and hearings, money that would have been much better spent on agricultural research. My third case in point, and one that should be on top of the list. One, mental illness. I'm relying on you, madam, to bring this real fact to the fore. One of the minutes I did see was very well written by Mrs. Dawn Sangster, saying that her husband David had been on the brink of mental breakdown caused by this Rule 7A. I have a good friend in the Lindis area who told me that he has also reached rock bottom with pressure of this ill-conceived 7A. I have 3 neighbours, all on small blocks with very little income and all in their mid-80s. Even the suggestion of Rule 7A, let alone the cost, is of the thing is approximately 20,000 each, is rendering all three of them to sleepless nights. They are carrying a huge weight of hopelessness. Two, I myself will be 80 next birthday. I just cannot get away from thinking, water, water, water. And it frustrates me knowing that I know more about water than the authors of Rule 7A. This costing myself, as well many similar-aged rural friends, anxiety to a level of severe fatigue and illness. If there was any sense in it, I would understand the need of it. But there is simply no sense in this one at all. It is worrying beyond belief. I personally just cannot get away from thinking about it. Three, if only David Parker and his henchmen, along with other local politicians and chief executives, would get off their hobby horses and come and see me so that I could show them how complex and wonderful our individual farms are and how important irrigation is. For what it is worth, I'm not a greedy farmer, as has been insinuated by our politicians. I have often been congratulated on the way I keep my property with its native plantings and the general pride I take in looking after my place. Five, I must confess being allergic to meaningless bureaucracy and nincompoops. Behaviour won't change, and civil servants involved with irrigation will have warm fuzzies, having spent a fortune for no benefit or feeling for our farming families. Six, I have some photographs on the back of this, of my property. Seven, Madam, I reiterate, 2,000 against this appalling rule change, 7A versus 5. Having spent time off our farms to sit through this, spells out very clearly that this is all about dictatorship, not democracy. Please hear us. 8. Finally, on behalf of the Logan community, I invite you and your two co-judges to come with me in my Land Cruiser for a quick trip round the Loban district, where I would show you just how complex and complicated water is. In probably less than 40 minutes, you would see medal-winning vineyards, modern cherry orchards, my K-line irrigation system, and many small holdings, all which require water. Thank you.
Through those photos, or just where to look at? You want to take us through the photos which you've attached, or just to look at them ourselves?
Essentially, to look at them.
Yeah.
There's one showing just haymaking with big bales mm-hmm. in my homestead.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the trees around there are over 100 years old. Next one, shorn sheep under the piece of range in the background, all on irrigated pasture that's there for winter grazing. And then a little mob of merinos. I might say my flock is one of the finest in the world. We're averaging 13 and 14 microns. And the little shadow is the not a very big dam, but it's the intake to my K-line systems, which are on two main lines out of the dam. The autumn colours in the house paddock, and I know those that knew my place would suggest it's one of the few park-like places in the district. And then raking hay on another pallet block. That's all I can add. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm interested to understand a little more about the water permit that you hold for the irrigation undertaken on Te Oma Station. So it's a deemed permit?
It's a deemed permit, and it's, well, it's in the pile, it's there. And I might add, this is one of the things that made me very angry when we first came down here. I hadn't been here very long, and one of my neighbours said, your irrigation permit's in the wrong gully. It's a dry gully. But I very quickly looked at it was. And we went back to it, and it was in catch and board days. It was registered, and I think the farmer at the time and the catch and board fellow, equally old, they walked to a viewpoint, and there's the intake away over there, and he's crossed it in the wrong place. And I went to the regional council, and I suggested that, well, they corrected it. It's been going since 1862 out of that gully, and there was no other race in the vicinity. And I said, well, just correct it. Oh, no, you've got to apply for a new right. And, well, I knew what that would be. And, you know, I'd be in trouble with everybody wanting their bobs worth. And we ended up in the High Court in Dunedin. Cost Sally, my late wife, and I $23,000. The sixth and the regional council spent $64,000 fighting it. We won, but we didn't get cost because of the age of the claim. But
so in relation to your deemed permit, do you take from a race or do you have an intake direct?
I've got
from
an intake.
Right, so the intake's on Lowburn.
On Lowburn Station. There's 1.8 kilometres of race across the top at about 800 metres above sea level and dropping into the Thomas Johnson Creek where I draw it out. It's metered at just where I take it out.
And is your take the only one taking from that race?
It's the only one from that creek, but I've got a small domestic right out of Thomas Johnson Creek. And there's one other take there, which is a priority above mine, but it's never bothered with. There's always plenty of water in the creek.
Which brings me on to the next question, these priorities. We've heard some evidence this morning that Lowburn Creek seems to have sufficient water such that the exercise of priorities has not caused issues in the past. What's your experience been in relation to the priorities?
It's never been a factor because the water's there. No. And having heard most schemes throughout the area, seldom do priorities ever cause a problem. It's, you know, we've all got to live in the community and we all work together.
So your experience, significant as it is one where communities are working together to manage the water resource and that hasn't relied on these priorities?
That's right. And my experience after 50 years at Terrace, there were a lot of priority systems there, but everybody worked together and we all cut back. It was, well, fair's fair. Mm.
So when you think about the irrigation taking place on Teoma Station, you've indicated that you have 100 hectares under irrigation.
Yes.
And that is irrigated, is it through a combination of border dikes or is it all K-line now?
It's essentially all K-line. There's a wee bit of border dike left, but one thing that hasn't come out is that border dikes, well, before the sprinkler systems, were very efficient, and I understand that. But if you put border dikes in, you've actually created 10% of the paddock in dikes, which are not productive.
So when you think about the area that you have under irrigation, that's been a fairly constant area since the K-line was installed?
It hasn't moved much. Well, the K-line extends a bit where into dry knobs and things that could never have been got before. But essentially, it's the same area.
And when did the K-line, when was the K-line installed?
It's, time goes by, must be about 12 years ago, over 2 years, 3 years. Mm. Couldn't afford to do it all at once.
And if I gave to you a map of your property, you'd be able to show me on the map and shade the areas of land under irrigation?
Yes, and I've got aerial photographs on a dry year and the whole lot shows extremely well.
And if you think about the period of time, September 2017 to March 2020, and you had to shade in the area under irrigation during that period, that would be a relatively straightforward task.
It would be, yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
Any questions? Thank you.
And I don't have any questions. Your evidence is straightforward and straight to the point. And anything that I can say would take away from that.
Thank you.
But I've heard what you've had to say, and I have heard the pain and the anguish over a long period of time. So thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
And we move to Mr. Kelly for the Galloway Irrigation Society Incorporated. Can you confirm your full name for the record?
Michael Robert Kelly.
And you have filed a submission for or on behalf of the Galloway Irrigation Society Incorporated with respect to Plan Change 7?
That's correct.
And that submission was dated the 4th of May 2020?
Correct.
You've also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to make with respect to that submission, and a copy of those key points has been circulated with the court this morning.
Great.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you are to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Right, yep.
Perhaps if you could now read through the summary document that you have provided to the court and then remain for some questions.
My name's Mike Kelly. My wife and I own a 10-hectare block at Galloway and have lived there for 25 years. We have 6 hectares of irrigated land on our property, and we farm deer on 5 hectares of that, and we have a 1-hectare walnut orchard. I have a Bachelor of Science in Geology and a Master of Applied Science in Planning and Climatology. I have been on the Galloway Irrigation Society Committee for 23 years and have been Secretary Treasurer for 17 of those years, and currently hold the position of Secretary Treasurer. I work as a planning consultant for WSP in Alexandra. I completed the application for the replacement permits for Galloway Irrigation Society, and I make this submission on behalf of the Galloway Irrigation Society. I take the submission as being read. But what I have included in this discussion document here is how Plan Change 7 affected our applications since I put in that first submission. So Galloway Irrigation has 3 water permits to take 425 litres a second from the Manahirikia River, 83 litres a second from Dip Creek, and 226 litres a second from the Manaburn Creek at the Manaburn Dam. So we also have 2 dam permits, with a small dam, 5-metre high dam for the Dip Creek take, and the lower Manaburn Dam, which is a 15-metre high dam on the Manaburn Creek. And we also have a land use consent for constructing gravel buns for the Manahirikia intake. So the application to renew these permits was lodged as a non-complying activity under Plan Change 7. Now, the reasons why we went down the non-complying pathway, under the controlled activity, the replacement permit for the northern section of the scheme would not have had an adequate water supply. I'll come back to that one. Longer-term permits are required for the management of large dams. Longer-term permits are required for the scheme to move on with future development. And also the Galloway Irrigation had spent a lot of cost on studies, hydrology, ecology, dam safety studies, development options to support applications for longer term permits. So in regard to an application as a controlled activity, under Plan Change 7, the northern section of the scheme would not have adequate water supply. So the water meters for Galloway were installed in 2015, so we only had 2 years of full data to be assessed under the controlled activity. 4 years of data, I mean. The pump take from the Manahira Kea, the water take from the Manahira Kea is pumped and it's managed so that the irrigators request to take water during their roster time. So this method of operation makes this in a very efficient take. Water is only, the pumps only go on basically when irrigators want the water. If, for example, there had been a rain period a few days beforehand, then they might only take half the water that they usually take. So this is what I mean, as in, it's an efficient take compared to a race that runs all the time. So with only 2 years of flow records for this pumped intake prior to 2017 and the PC7 audit method that averages the flow data, we would not have had enough water to irrigate the northern section of the scheme. The volume calculated under the PC7 audit methodology was less than the volumes calculated under the Aqualink guidelines. And the court accepts the Aqualink guidelines is what the Regional Council takes as the efficient irrigation.
Has been in the past, but whether that's what goes into the schedule is what the experts are conferencing on.
It's up until this stage, that's what I mean. So we note that the proposed amendments to Plan Change 7 for the controlled activity, whereby existing use is calculated from the flow records for the last 5 years, so I believe this part of the controlled activities is changed so that your existing use is taken over the last 5 years up until March 2020. This is an improvement, we note that, but we also need to audit the maximum rates of take and volume from the flow records. So if the flow records are averaged over the 5 year period, like as in the last 5 years, what I mean, we would still end up with less than the Aqualink guidelines.
Is that what you think the schedule's doing now?
No, I understand that it's been proposed to change it to maximum.
Yes. Yeah. So things have moved on.
Things have moved on. Although, from our point of view, we won't know whether that's been a decision until the report from this environment court comes out in, I believe, two or three months' time.
Mm.
We won't know whether that's actually the method.
Well, I think it would be unlikely we'd go back to averagings. If that's not the weight of expert opinion, and if that's not correlated with farmer experience on the ground in terms of how averages will work out for them.
Hmm. No, that's good. That's the preference.
Yeah.
To take the maximums.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the GIS, the Galloway Irrigation take from the Menaboon Creek is the opposite situation in that the race flows full time during the irrigation season. If the water is not used for irrigation, it is bywashed back to the river from the end of the water race. This results in a flow record that shows a volume of water taken that is twice the amount required for the area irrigated. And that, when I say twice the amount, that's the amount as calculated under the Aqualink guidelines.
Can you just pause there a second? I just need to read that. But could you just slow down a little bit and I'll read that sentence again. All right, carry on.
Okay. So an application for this permit the take from the Menabun under Plan Change 7 controlled activity would allow the same amount of water to be taken, as in twice as much as what's needed for the area it irrigates. But hence the statement in my earlier submission that the Plan Change 7 controlled activity and audit methodology penalises an efficient irrigator and rewards an inefficient irrigator.
So what would you rather them, switch you off? The schedule is there, is, and obviously it's required a heck of a lot of work, and you know, and it's still under development, but the schedule's there to ensure that everybody, whether they're efficient or inefficient, continued to have access to water at volumes which they had been applying in the past to their farms, so that the likes of Edgar Parcell, for example, isn't required to switch his wild flooding onto K-lines or whatever, you know, he can do up the Bannockburn, so that everybody has access to water. That's the philosophy.
So it's
not penalising, it's trying to ensure that all farmers have access to water.
Yes.
That reflects their current irrigation systems.
Yeah, so under the water plan, as it was...
I know there's a drive to efficiency under the water plan, and that's caught out many farmers because they were responding to the signal in the policy. And many in readiness for the applications to replace their permits. And now this comes along, PC7 comes along. So I understand that. But the signal, there's a different signal in this plan change, and that's the question for the court, is whether to go with the signal or not, which is hold fire because of the other regulation which is to come. Not only a land and water plan, which you're aware of, and you'll be aware of a proposed an RPS coming next month, but there are other things in the environment that you will need to take into account, including climate change and other pieces of legislation. So, the question is, do you wait for all of that, or do you go ahead now in spite of that? And that's very difficult as far as decision making goes, but there is a decision to be made.
Yeah, well, I understand that's the background to Plan Change 7, but the water plan already had a lot of good policy in it that we could have dealt with this. That's one aspect of it. The other one is that the bulk of the water permits in Central Otago expire this year. And so the new policy that's coming out, the new land and water plan, is not there now.
No.
And
but you're a planner. You know how these things are shake down, and sometimes plans get out of sequence, which is...
Yeah, and I've been thinking through, just listening to the court yesterday, why this one is quite different. I know you have plan changes come along and you work away at a court, and through that process, that plan change can change as it moves on. But in this case, the people that are affected, their permits are expiring at the same time. So you're talking about what might happen with that new permit in a court case when that permit is just expiring. Like, I wanted to talk about the Coal Creek case, if I was allowed to after this, to explain what I mean here. But I'll finish Galloway irrigation first. But I think that's the difference here, and that with Plan Change 7, the permits are expiring at almost at the same time that the new policy is being... The goalposts keep moving on how those permits are going to be replaced. And it's a really high stress, high anxiety time.
Well, we can see that.
And even the fact that you go... people say, oh, what's the problem? You can have 6 years of just taking what you have been so far. It's the stress from, or rather the anxiety about that, has been reduced quite a lot by changing Plan Change 7 so that you can take the maximum. And you can take your last 5 years, not just what you had up to 2017. So that you, I appreciate that's made a difference. But these permits are going to be issued for 6 years, for a six-year term, and I hear there's lots of questions about the priorities. And a lot of water permit users won't really know what the priority is. They haven't called in their priorities. Mm-hmm. They haven't had to. But it is in the background of a lot of the sharing arrangements that exist in these catchments. I mean, Mr. Holland explained this morning about the pig burn.
Mm.
And so Plan Change 6A, the Regional Council came out with in around 2012, and the emphasis there was to recognise, was to say, how you guys are best to deal with priorities is to get together as a catchment, work out what your priorities are, and then come up with water sharing agreements. Because when these priorities expire in 2021, then the way that the farms may have developed in that catchment will be recognised in water sharing agreements. That was a really good policy. And so a lot of smaller catchments, we heard from about the pig burn this morning, the sow burn, for instance, have actually come up with a really good water sharing agreement. Manahirakia have worked at it, the whole Manahirakia catchment have worked at it with their sub-tributary sub-catchment groups over the last 5 or 6 years, and come up with water sharing agreements, come up with residual flows for the catchments. Those won't be recognised because we can't go through the process now of getting those in place. We end up with six-year permits that actually don't have priorities in the background, and you don't have the water sharing agreements in place either, or residual flows. Now, all of these things that have been worked out over the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, the court is alert to the potential problem with priorities and is working through that problem through its own special advisers and putting that the special advisor onto the expert conference, and also through the appointment of a QC, because the issue of priorities and how they stand in the background just wasn't covered adequately in the evidence. But the court has endeavoured to draw out that evidence to try and have some picture of what are the risks, and the risks, my sense of it, are different depending on the catchment that you're in. For example, in Lowburn, the last 25 years, it doesn't seem, the witnesses that we've heard don't seem to have exercised them because of the reliable flow. But we've also heard other witnesses who have exercised them, have actually exercised them to turn off their neighbours as well, not just flow sharing agreements like the last witness, flow sharing arrangements like the last witness had entered into, or previous witness to him had entered into. So we're aware of priorities, we're aware of their significance standing behind the user groups. We're aware of other different things happening in relation to the Manahirakia catchment. So the risk to different catchments, sub-catchments, I expect, is different, and we're working on that problem.
Okay, yeah, so as long as that awareness is there, that the priorities are in the background to a lot of the current agreements or current ways that water is used in catchments. Like yesterday, for instance, when Blackstone were presenting, the Blackstone Irrigation Scheme, in the priorities of the Manahirakia catchment, they have one of the earliest or the highest priorities in the catchment. But those are forgotten about nowadays because that was all formed into agreement with the Falls Dam Group. I suppose that's been explained to the court.
Yeah, it has been explained.
So people don't know...
From what we've been told, Manahirakia is managing that issue very intelligently and has been for some time.
Yes. Yep. And have gone to a lot of expense to work out a full flow sharing agreement and residual flows, minimum flows in the catchment, and Plan Change 7 comes along and says, well, sorry, we don't want to hear about that now. We'll work that out later. So it's a very frustrating process for a lot of people.
It's enormously frustrating, but you are a planner. You have knowledge of the MPS for freshwater management?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how do you see that being rolled out elsewhere in the country?
I believe that the Lindis case went through recently by
Lindis
referring
went through in to... under the old MPS, 2017, which hadn't been implemented by Otago. And to be fair, few councils have implemented the previous two MPSs in any rigorous way, which is why the government's had a third attempt at it. So we're not looking at the Lindis example. We've got another MPS to deal with. What's your experience elsewhere in other regions of dealing with the MPS for freshwater management? And if you don't have any experience, just say so.
In other areas, that's right, I haven't.
Right.
But I believe that the decisions can be made with the current water plan and with the NPS and the National Environment Standards as they came out last year, without a Plan Change 7. And yes, they might take some time, and it may extend into the production of this new water plan, but they are all decisions that the new water plan is going to have to make anyway. If you know what I mean. Like, so my view, for instance...
What would you think the counter-argument to that is? If you were Ngāi Tahu standing here, what would be their view on that?
I understand that their view is that they don't want to be a submitter. They want to be a partner in the values and the allocation in these catchments, and that's fair enough. But it's all about how do you get to a process of groups having their views about a catchment, and how that's formed into policy, into water plans.
Mm.
And so everything for the Manukau as an example, everything goes on hold until things get discussed and new water plan comes out. But things could be discussed if we went ahead and notified the whole Manuherakia group. They would get discussed in just the same way as the regional council is going to have to carry out consultation over the next 2 years to get this. They've got a huge challenge to get...
Isn't that the point, though? They don't get discussed in just the same way. It's a different discussion. Or is it your view that it wouldn't be any different? You'll discuss it the way that you want to discuss it, which is the way it has been discussed previously under the water current operative water plan.
Which is quite a standard format. It's a hearing.
Yeah.
And the parties that are affected...
So then you don't see any change, you don't see any value or policy signal in the new MPS for a different discussion?
I know that is what is behind a lot of the direction that things are supposed to be going now, and that Tamana Otawai is a process and not an actual document. It's not a science document. But I look at how, okay, there's that view, but there's also a lot of water permits, a lot of people's livelihoods are expiring this year.
Mm.
And can the Tamana Otawai process and those views, why can't they be brought into a hearing situation, to a public notification? That's the part
You don't understand that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I understand.
And I know I can't understand it because I don't have that background. But as in, you know, I don't have Maori heritage.
No, but you are a planner, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so that's what I mean. I appreciate that there is a different view.
It's not a Maori-centric. You don't have to be Maori to be applying te manara to Hawaii. It is actually a water-centric approach, so that's the policy signal. I don't need Ngāi Tahu standing in this room to apply that policy approach, because that is the policy that needs to be taken. Did you not understand that it's not a Māori-centric freshwater management MPS? It's not. Their values are being brought into it, but Te Mana Aotearoa is something fundamentally different. It's in Te Reo, but it's not. It's water-centric. That's its driver. Or have you not?
Water-centric with views from a different approach or a different group?
It's a different approach. With attention now on water. And the values of water in and of itself, and not as a commodity, if I could put it that way.
I sort of go back to my previous point. I don't see why that could not be discussed through the notification process.
Yeah, no, I know.
We really need to get on with, because there are a large lot of water permits expiring.
Yep, I understand what you're saying. Yep. Mm-hmm. But you've only got up to paragraph 6. So do you want to finish up paragraph 6 of your submission?
Oh, yeah, okay.
I distracted you.
Okay, so 7. If Plantain 7 is amended as proposed and the non-complying pathway becomes impossible to achieve, then the GIS Galloway irrigation application will be amended to a rollover of the existing permits, and the reduced volume of take and residual flow would not be realised. So the granting of short-term permits is detrimental to the development of the scheme and the conversion to more efficient methods of irrigation. So this is for Galloway irrigation in particular. Yeah. With an open water race conveyance system as we have at present, a conversion to spray irrigation on individual properties requires construction of a dam or installation of water tanks and installing pumps on each property. So the GIS scheme is dominated by a lot of smaller blocks. There's 74 irrigators for 520 hectares. And it's not practical or economically feasible for all of the individual irrigators to invest in dams and pumps. So the scheme's future plan would be to construct a pumped pressurised pipeline scheme where the irrigators will have pressurised pipe supply to the front gate. So the scheme will not progress this option with short-term water permits and dam permits, short-term dam permits, and not knowing what minimum flows in the Manuhirakia will be or residual flows in the tributaries. So the Galloway preference is for the Manuhirakia group to get on with the public notification of the whole group of applications, along with a proposed Manuhirakia River management plan. But this will not be possible unless PC7 is declined, or at least if Plan Change 7 includes a feasible non-complying pathway for applications that have environmental gains.
Now, you wanted to add something else to it. Yes,
I just wanted to talk about the Coal Creek example from yesterday, but if there are questions and things to do with Galloway, it'd be good to have those first.
Oh, okay. Coal Creek, because you represent them and you know something about them? You consult for them and know something about them?
Coal Creek, yes, because I did the application for them for their water permits.
Might as well just crack on with that so we know what you, and then we can ask you, or Mr. Moore can ask you questions.
Okay. So how it's related to the Manuhirakia one in that the Coal Creek water users are a group who had really good intentions. They set up a catchment group as recommended by the Regional Council 5 years ago, and they asked me to do their water permit for them, their application for them. So the main emphasis on the water permit of a water permit application under the water plan was you need to show that the water is available, so you need to know the hydrology of the catchment, and you need to show what the effects on the creek are from taking the water out. So a catchment group has to set about getting that information. So in the case of Coal Creek, we employed a hydrologist. They modelled water from another catchment where there were flows, because Coal Creek there was no flow record. That was quite a cost. That report cost around $7,000. They then carried out quite a lot of longitudinal flow studies on the creek to work out what effects they were having between the three different takes up and down the creek. And we put together an application to show that there was enough water in the creek and that it wasn't having adverse effects on the creek. So Plan Change 7 comes along and the application could not comply with it because, again, they only had 1 or 2 years of flow records before 2017. The irrigation areas changed changed from what they were before 2018. And they had already spent the money on working out the catchment, so they wanted to go for longer-term permits. I had discussions with them and said, well, do you want to go with these controlled activities or do you want to go for non-complying? We had to go for non-complying basically because of that issue with only having 1 or 2 years of permits before 2017. So last year we worked away on the application. We realised that if you go down the non-complying pathway, you have to show less than minor effects and you have to include environmental gains if you want to get anywhere with it. So we put more time into the application. We had NIWA in to do more longitudinal flow surveys and we put together the application. And as you heard yesterday, it was a large cost for a small group. I lodged the application in March this year. 2 weeks later, via this process, it comes out that you can include your permits. You can use your flow records up until 2020. You can consider your irrigation area after 2018, and that's good. That's how it changed. But also, it shut down the non-complying pathway. So this group has spent a large amount of money trying to come up with a package for their catchment. Not trying to, they did. They came up with a really good package for that catchment with a flow sharing agreement and residual flows. But a very high cost to do so. And now the non-complying pathway that we designed that application for has been shut down. Now, you heard from Malkeet Dillon yesterday, and he was saying how his water permit's been cut back by half. Well, not really. The water permit went in for, I consulted with all of the irrigators in that group about what their maximum take was, what their irrigation regime was, and we put the permit amount in for that. It ended up being less than what they had on paper because their paper permits were these old mining privilege permits. In one case, they had a water race that allowed 9 heads. They only used one. But that's the sort of situation where a lot of these deemed permits, they've just been rolled over for years and years, and they're still large amounts, even though the use is only a lot less. I mean, you've probably heard that presented before. So that's a case of a group, and it's similar to the Menhirakia, where they've done a lot of research, spent a lot of money to try and come up with a good solution for that catchment, and now it goes on hold. 6-year permits. Now, as you heard from Mal Keat yesterday, he said he actually wants to get out of the orchard now, but he can't. He can't move on because he will have a permit. He will only have a 6-year permit and he won't know what it's going to be after that. It's very hard to sell a property for that reason. So that's an example of how Plan Change 7, Regional Council moving the goalposts between the different versions of Plan Change 7 at the same time that these applications have to be in and permits are expiring has been really difficult.
Okay. And I know that too. I know that because you've got the operative plan and you've got that plan change sitting there, people have had to make an application having taken into account both. And so I understand that. And that in and of itself generates costs. It generates large costs, which otherwise you wouldn't have if you've only just got the one plan sitting there. Unfortunately, and you know this, this is how the Act works. There have been inefficiencies, though, with Plan Change 7 in terms of how it was notified and driving for environmental outcomes, which are no longer being pursued. And in the drive for environmental outcomes, so I understand that many farmers have sought to pursue non-compliant consents because those outcomes look like anything, look like what was being asked of them out of an operative plan. So it is what it is. We still need to make a decision on Plan Change 7. And I know that many, many people have incurred huge costs because of the coincidence of both of those plans.
And I sort of come back to a point when we were talking previously. Would there be a different outcome if, particularly for Coal Creek, this is it's a tributary of the Clutha, so there's like no downstream effects because the Clutha being a large volume. Would there be a different outcome if they could carry on, notify what they've got now, talk about it with Fish and Game, and iwi, doc, and come up with it, compared to now going short-term permits, going through this new water plan process, to Mana Otawai, apply to it, all, you know, what are the values all worked out? I don't think it's going to be any different than if they went ahead with the package they've designed now.
I don't know. I mean, I don't sit in judgment over that application. I haven't seen it, and I don't know. I don't know. And neither do you, because you don't know what's coming up in the new plans either.
No. I actually was quite pleased, though, because when that application did go off for a technical analysis by the Regional Council consultants, and it came back, no further information required. We believe there is less than minor effects on that catchment. And I thought it was good. So this is a prime. This is a really good example of one that we should go to notify. Let's hear what iwi values are. Let's hear what Fish and Game think, and get on with it. But now, since that wording came along, avoid granting the non-complying pathway shut down, and this group does not want to spend any more on it.
All right. Thank you. Now, got any questions, Mr. Moore?
I do, thank you. And I just want to understand, if you're able to assist, the concern expressed by Mr. Dillon yesterday in relation to the water allocation that he requires for frost fighting of his orchard and the quantum being halved as a result of the application. Are you able to assist whether what the underlying issue is in relation to that concern?
Yes. So the water permit, the one that where he takes his water from, is 83 litres a second. The application, when I looked at the flow records over the last 5 years and also worked out the amount of water they need under the Aqualink guidelines, they only really need about half of that amount. So I worked through those processes. I asked them, I said, so what's your pumping rate when you're irrigating your place? And so we designed the application rate of what we applied for on that permit based on those variables. And so it wasn't half. We applied for Malkeet's property is the one that actually takes the uses the highest amount. So that application went in for 53 litres a second, normal use, and with a condition for 75 litres a second for frost fighting. And so their previous permit was 83. So he sees the reduction from 83 down to 53, but didn't quite connect that's what his actual use is.
And is it fair to say that that reduction was coming about because of the operative water plan as opposed to what Plan Change 7 was seeking to achieve?
Yes, because we wanted to put together a package to show so that the water in that catchment was shared between the three takes. And we were looking at what's the overall allocation based on MALF, the mean annual low flow that came out of the hydrology study that we had done, and how that could be apportioned between the three takes on that creek.
So when you now think about Plan Change 7 and you think about where the schedule is now recommended to be following expert witness conferencing, is it your understanding that with respect to that take, the full or the maximum amount that has been taken, the 83 litres per second, would be capable of being reconsented for the 6-year period to follow?
As in audit of the existing flow records?
Yes, through to 2020, as the experts are now recommending.
No, it wouldn't come out to that level, no, because I've done that analysis.
Is your analysis based on averages or was it based on maxima?
Both. I did the analysis of both. What I came up with was on... The maxima is quite high on that take. And if we applied for that amount, and so in the application that I came up with, it wasn't based on the maximas that they take, because it had to fit in with their flow sharing agreement, and so but the application did go in for the maximum amount that each property can take.
So put that application to one side for present purposes. And if you think about the schedule as seeking to reflect historical use based on maxima over the past 5 year or the 5 year period prior to 2020, would that result in Mr. Dillon being eligible for a controlled activity pathway for his full rate of take?
The water records are very disjointed in that case. They've had a lot of trouble with their water meter, and he would possibly end up with less for these 6-year permits than what we applied for.
And why is that?
Because like I say, there's a lot of problem with the water meters not being consistently run through that 5-year period.
So when you think about the hydrograph in that situation, are you saying that there are no maxima in terms of rates of take recorded on the hydrograph?
There's no maxima recorded yet. No, there is. Yeah, there's maxima recorded.
Are you across the detail of the schedule as the experts are now recommending?
Yes.
And do you understand that that schedule is seeking to reflect the maximum rates of take recorded across that period?
Yes.
And so if a maximum rate was recorded on the flow meter across that period, that would be the rate that could be applied for?
Yes. And as far as the rates of take go, the maximum has actually exceeded the 83 litres a second quite often. And that becomes quite an auditing exercise to work out their flow record. But when you look at the monthly and the annual takes, it ends up being less than Aqualink.
Let's stay with the rate of take for a moment. Do you understand how the schedule is now recommended to deal with that situation in terms of rounding down the take beyond the permitted level to the permitted level?
Mm-hmm.
And so that would work in terms of the rate of take, wouldn't it?
But how do you mean work?
Well, Mr. Dillon's maximum rate of take of his 83 litres per second, he would be able to apply for that based on his water meter data.
Yes.
And it was the instantaneous rate of take that Mr. Dillon was speaking about yesterday and expressing concerns about in the context of frost fighting.
Yes. Yes, yeah, yep. And he was, he misunderstood actually as far as what the application that we put in was and what his water requirements are for that property.
What I'm trying to understand is whether Plan Change 7 is having the effect of reducing the water that, in this context, Mr. Dillon has been taking historically and would be seeking to reconsent.
How would it affect it? It's not easy to answer that question because that's a shared water take between five orchard owners. And so, yes, there would be enough for Mr. Dillon's property, but you have to include the other five as well. The other four, sorry.
Right, we'll move on to a new topic. When you're thinking about applications to take water, and when you're thinking about the management of fresh water, and you're wearing your planning hat and you're advising people who are looking to take water across the region, what's changed in your mind as a result of the NPSFM 2020 coming into force?
More consideration for what's left in the creek, basically.
Do you, when you're thinking about that, is it an incremental change in terms of the approach to water management, or is it something else?
So the NPSFM FW is an incremental change to water management.
Well, is it? How do you conceptualise the shift? Is it a significant shift in the way fresh water is to be managed, or is it really just adding some additional considerations to the way that water's been managed over the past decade?
I believe it's a change in, it's a response to a lot more pressure being put on fresh water on catchments in New Zealand, and more intensive farming, so there has to be, there's a realisation that the rivers were becoming degraded, the with a lot more pressure being put on them, and so NPS Freshwater is a response to that to try and bring the, you know, your low levels up more and improve your allocation.
Do you accept that the NPS 2020 is bringing about a fundamental change in the way that freshwater is managed in New Zealand?
So, based on what you were saying before, is it incremental or is it a fundamental change? No, if I think about, say, the case of the Manuhirakia, the group has run a voluntary minimum flow, a flow where it's kind of accepted in their catchment that you don't want to see the river below that. And so, talking about what the minimum flow should be in that catchment, or even imposing a minimum flow, is not it's not a very new thing. It's not a fundamental change. It's something that incrementally over the last 20 years, 10 to 20 years, people in that catchment have kind of imposed themselves.
So let's stay perhaps back at the conceptual level. What's your thinking in terms of this new NPSFM? Are you thinking about it as a fundamental shift or not?
A fundamental shift. Depends how you determine that. I think it's a push to improve the bottom line of how we look after these catchments. Why is it so important to determine whether that's a fundamental large shift or not?
When you think about the new NPSFM and you think about the concept of te mana or te wai, what do you have in mind when you think of that concept?
That the views of the Indigenous people should have more emphasis, or more value when sorting out what our bottom lines are for these groups.
Have you read the NPSFM?
Yes.
Have you read the objective in the NPSFM?
Yeah.
And have you read the hierarchy of priorities in the NPSFM?
Yes.
And what's the first priority?
I can't quote them, sorry.
The health and well-being of the water body itself.
Yeah.
Now that's not a Māori concept, is it?
No, but probably the definition of what a healthy waterway is, I believe, is different for some iwi groups than what the farmers or the other water users in the catchment might think.
And so the values that might be important that need to be taken into account when establishing a flow and allocation regime may extend beyond ecological values and hydrological values?
Yeah, I believe that's some of the thinking in te mana o te wai, that it's meant to include the values of Māori, of water having a life force. And, and that's part of what the NPS Freshwater is about, is trying to bring those into the bottom lines of how we deal with these catchments.
No, thank you, Your Honour. No further questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Questions.
And no questions from me, so thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you. Okay, thanks for the time.
All righty. Do we move on to the next witness? I think we might. We do, because it's coming up anyway. So.
That's yesterday's schedule. That's probably not going to help. Mr. Herlihy, Maniatota Irrigation Company.
Religious.
Do you swear by Almighty God that the evidence you give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
If you could confirm your full name for the record.
Gavin James Hurley.
Now, have you lodged a submission in your own name on Plan Change 7, or are you speaking to the submission lodged by the Maniatoto Irrigation Company?
I have put it under my own name, dated 5th of February 21, is my brief of evidence. I also submitted written on the proposal, a Plan Change 7 proposal, back in mid-2020 under the guise of about four of the operations that I'm associated with. But the knowledge I bring here to this table is basically around the Sowburn Water Company and the Sowburn Creek and the Pigburn Water Users Group, namely the Pigburn Creek.
Right, I'm just trying to clarify in the first instance which submission on Plan Change 7 you are speaking to. And I have in front of me a submission in the name of the Maniatoto Irrigation Company with Ms. McKeag and James Herlihy noted as the contact persons. And I'm just trying to understand whether that is the submission that you've referred to that you filed back in 2020 or whether it was a different submission.
No, there was a different submission, the one that I filed back in February, 5th of February was, yes, brief evidence of Gavin Hurley in support of the Maniatoto Irrigation Company and the Maniatoto Eastside Irrigation Company.
Right, I'm not...
You haven't got that?
No, I do have that, but yeah. I'm just trying to figure out which the underlying submission is. I do have the brief of evidence of the 5th of February.
I made written submissions back in April, was it, under the guise of as chairman of the Sowburn Water Company.
Chairman of the what?
Chairman of the Greenbank Pastoral Limited, as chairman of Hamilton's Dairy Limited, as a member of the Pigburn Water Users Group. All individual different applications, submissions rather.
And today, are you giving evidence on behalf of all four or one or more? That's the question.
All four will do.
Okay.
Right. That clarifies that. Right.
Yep.
And in addition to those submissions, you have prepared a brief of evidence of Gavin Herlihy in support of the Maniatoto Irrigation Company Limited and Maniatoto Eastside Irrigation Company Limited. And that brief of evidence is dated the 5th of February 2021.
Correct.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to that statement of evidence?
No. If I was to rewrite it again, I would rewrite number 5 differently, and I will explain that in a discussion which I wish to have with this court.
Have you prepared any further written material that you wish to circulate?
No.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you have filed dated 5 February is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
And that the evidence that you will give to this court is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Now, if you would please provide a summary of the key points that you wish to make in relation to the evidence that you have given.
The key points I wish to make is... to assist the court and the impact of Plan Change 7 on the application for the Pig Bend Water Users Group. I wish to share with you the process that we successfully got through for the Salburn as against the Pig Burn, which you heard in the words of my son was binned, or has been binned, which you, my honour, had some trouble in coming to grips with the meaning of that word. If I can start with the Salburn, we as a group of five farming entities worked together on a proposal which we then shared with the interested parties who were Department of Conservation, Maori interests and Fish and Game, and ran a number of field days, a number of visits, so they could understand the basis of what we were attempting to achieve and how that affected our farming operation and how that application would affect the Salburn Creek. We only got the unconditional support of those three interested parties by putting forward a compensation package which involved effectively the retirement of a lot of land owned by Dairy Farm Partnership on the iconic Manitoto Scroll Plain adjoining the Tairi River, and also Greenback Pastoral Limited, the farm that I chair. The environmental compensation there surrounded an agreement with interested parties, Fish and Game et al., on the management, the grazing management and times of management and the type of stock that we would graze on the Tairi Flats. We also granted fishermen access to Fish and Game through our property. So what actually happened was a win-win for both sides of the environment and those interested parties. And while there was some reduction in the ability and the volumes of water that could be extracted from the Salburn by the current abstractees, it was seen as a win-win for both parties. In fact, the Regional Council regarded the Salburn Agreement as the blueprint, the way forward, and we were touted as this was the way that catchments should approach the 2021 problem. I must point out we were the first to take up this challenge of moving from a deemed permit era into what is to be the post-2021 era. That proposal, the Salburn proposal, was a relatively cheap one for those involved. The total cost was less than $20,000. We employed no consultants, no lawyers. We did hire a hydrologist for an environmental study, but the whole process was less than $20,000. Move the clock forward to the Pig Burn. In 2015, a total different approach, because we used consultants there. In February 20, we lodged a proposal, and as you heard, an application to the ORC back in February of last year. And you may recall Renee Weir and her evidence yesterday as to the haircut that we took. I can give the exact haircut, the details of that haircut. For example, the primary take was restrained to 60 litres a second at what would have been a new combined take, compared to the current maximum abstraction rate, on paper anyway, of 2021. Why do we do that? Because we believe we no longer enjoy the unconstrained ownership of water as was the case under the old deemed permit system. So what we were putting up was to recognise the realisation going forward that we have to share the creek with other interests. So we put that up. It was accepted by the Department of Conservation, but unfortunately that application was opposed by two parties, namely Okuha and Fish and Game. We had a pre-hearing meeting in August. No progress was being made, but rather than set a hearing date, we believed there had to be a better way forward than spending all that money on a hearing. Why not spend some of that money in providing permanent environmental gains? So in late August, we put before those two opposing parties a three-pronged proposal. The major bit was that we would, as a group, spend up to $50,000 over a five-year period on enhancing an already existing wetland adjacent to the Tairi River. That involved the making of access tracks, a car park, signage, interpretation boards for the place of eels in the environment, marrow value on eels, putting in a structure that would control the drying up of that wetland over the summer period. That was part of that proposal. We thought we were over the line because we, as part of that proposal, we also reduced what we had applied for was the 35-year term. And I must say, I should have added that the Salburn were awarded a 35-year term back in 2015. So, unfortunately, the two people we were dealing with in Aukaha left the organisation, although they had expressed that this was a great way forward this was likely to be accepted by their organisation. However, we then had to go through more consultation, which we did. We had another day in December whereby representatives of those opposing parties came on board and had a look. We reduced the term. We proposed to reduce the term then to 20 years. Time passed by. We then were approached by Fish and Game as to whether we would be prepared to reduce our term to 15 years in order to get the proposal over the line, which we reluctantly agreed to. Then in early April, we unfortunately received final note that the whole application had been turned down. We were absolutely, totally gutted at that stage as a small community. We have spent to date around $60,000. And as you heard by the two submitters or over the past two or three days, that we have now the alternative of going to a hearing, which our advisors tell us that even if we are successful, we are likely to be appealed, or to stick with our original application, which they advise us not to. Why should we take the haircut over the next 6 years or just go back to effectively seeking a rollover of our existing takes? Very disappointing, to say the least. So what has changed between the Salburn, which was a very successful exercise 5 years ago, to what has happened now? In one word, Plan Change 7. It has impacted in an incredibly negative way on attempting to progress an outcome for the continued use of the Pigburn, so be it in a much reduced form. Why has this happened? I believe the opposing parties have been emboldened by the presence of Plan Change 7. They've been emboldened by their expectations of the process that's likely to come out by the commissioners. They've also been emboldened by the prospect of a new resource management which gives total precedence and preference for the environment over the use of water for productive and community purposes. So this has led to them taking a stance that they will oppose everything at the moment going through, as evidenced by the pig burn, which should have been a win-win for both sides. They are effectively single-mindedly putting their aspirations for the use of any water in central Otago ahead of the obvious needs of the community and those people who live and work in the area. Also very short-sighted from them, realising that the burgeoning horticulture sector of central Otago to go forward, be it the boom crop of the moment in cherries or further vineyard development, requires water. Very frustrating, but this has all been emboldened by Plan Change 7, the market change in approach. With respect, so Fish and Game believe that by rolling everything forward, they will be the benefactors of that process and stance that they are taking at the moment. With respect to our kaha, they are in there for even a longer-term game, and one doesn't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to work out what the end point of that process may be. So, Commissioners, that's the situation that has occurred between the then, the sow burn, and the now, the pig burn. We have the prospect of facing the expenditure of going to a hearing of $70,000, which we believe we would win, but there again, that money may be further money down the drain if that decision was appealed. And if that decision was appealed, we have been advised that appeal would be heard under Plan Change 7. So we, the Pigburn, have become pawns in a much bigger situation, and it has been very stressful on those involved, very costly on those involved. It's a situation which we should never have been in, and that's why Plan Change 7, to me, is an anathema. We don't need it. It should never have been instituted, and we request that this be deleted from its impending implementation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
No questions, Your Honour.
Thank you. Any questions? Questions?
Were you given any reasons for the rejection of the application?
I'm sorry, could you...
Were you given any reasons why the application was turned down?
Yes, from the view of Waikaha, Tamana OTY, they said it did not believe it came satisfied those requirements. Now, what those requirements actually are in real terms with respect to the pig burn, we have never been able to get that out of their personnel. They also believed it would entrench the overall allocation in this catchment, which I refute. If you look at the history of the Upper Tyree catchment, it has been enhanced over the last 50 years by the advent of the Maniatoto Irrigation Scheme. Mother Nature impacted on our area in 71, where the flow of the Tairo River at the Green Bridge at Waipiata, the measuring point that you've, a number of submitters have referred to over the last 2 days, actually stopped. It was zero. Now, with the advent of the Maniatota Irrigation Scheme and by the use of the farmer stored water in the Loganburn Reservoir, the Maniatota Irrigation Scheme, as part of their condition of consent, have to supply water to ensure that there is 1,000 litres a second at all times at that bridge. So there's been a major environmental enhancement of the flow of the Tairi. Sure, there may have been over allocation pre the period or pre the introduction of the Maniatota Irrigation Scheme, but the minimum flows, which now, you know, we have a water plan and it is effectively one that is working. Similarly, I refer to the evidence of Ben Hoare yesterday, where traditionally you could walk across the Manuhirikia in the dry year. Now, with irrigation and the Falls Dam and the minimum flows imposed on that particular stream, a much enhanced environment. So I do not believe, and then the process of that we will go through over the next few years in looking at what the overall allocation should be for each catchment, I do not believe or when the facts actually come out, rather than just the one sentence mantra of over-allocation, it will show that we have an effective water management plan now that has benefited the upper Tairi catchment and the flows of the Tairi River over the last period since irrigation has been operative.
So there were two basic reasons they turned it down that you were aware of?
I'm sorry, Mr. Bunning.
There were two basic reasons why the application was turned down.
Yes, the Fish and Game, the reason they put forward was that in their view, there was not sufficient compensation of the environment damage that any abstractions or the abstraction regime which we put forward. They have failed to come up with what would be acceptable to them, and I believe that would be the only solution would be nil abstractions. But they haven't said that, but that's by implication. While the pendulum has swung where farmers really had 100% of control of the water, they want now 100% of control of the water.
But I thought you said you'd virtually reached agreement with them on...
We did with the sow burn, but not with the pig burn.
Not with the pig burn, OK. Sorry, I misunderstood.
So things changed markedly in 5 years. Also, there was a change of personnel, and the personnel at Fish and Game compared to what we had to work with in 2015 on the sow burn, I don't believe that person would recognise a good deal if he tripped over it.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you. I have no questions. Anything arising? Yep.
Clarification. Mm-hmm. You've noted that the pig boom application was rejected. I just want to make sure I've understood the sequence here. Is what has happened that a written approval was required from both Fish and Game and from Okaha, and that those written approvals have not been forthcoming? Is that the situation, or has the council itself declined the application?
Oh, no, council hasn't declined it. Our application still sits with council, waiting for us to reactivate it. We were waiting it for 8 months for acceptance or rejection of the deal, which we amended over time of those 8 months, and it was absolutely gutting. I just could not believe the rejection of that deal. But we, as I said, we are the pawns in a much bigger picture.
So just
very,
to be
very
be
frustrating,
clear.
Very stressful, very costly. We've poured $60,000 down the drain for nothing, and that's all due to Plan Chain 7.
The rejection was the rejection by those two named parties to provide a written approval.
Yes.
Understand. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
Okay, so that brings us close to 1 o'clock, and I propose we take a break. How are you going?
Don't ask. poorly is what I would suggest. Yeah. What have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4. Possibly 9 more representations to get through to lunch on the schedule. That said, there are only 3 noted over the page, so we'll just keep boxing on.
Okay. So you want a short break for lunch?
Probably 45 minutes if we can work to that.
Yep. So back here at quarter to two?
Yep. Yes.
Very good. All right, so back here at quarter to two, we'll just take a short break.
All rise.